Living the Prosperity Consciousness reveals the secret of discovering the truth in our lives and in every situation we face. All the Bible quotes are from Matthew chapter 7.
Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you.
Intelligence is just as essential a part of the Christian message as love. God is love, but God is also infinite intelligence. And unless these two qualities are balanced in our lives, we don't have wisdom. For wisdom is the perfect blending of intelligence and love. Love without intelligence can do harm. The spoiled child is a case in point. And intelligence without love can be cruel. For any act without genuine concern for others is hypocrisy. All true Christian acts will express wisdom. Wisdom is the perfect blending of intelligence and love.
Wisdom is the perfect blending of intelligence and love.
When people first experience the knowledge of the truth and its positive influence on their lives, they are so excited that often it's all they can talk about, and they urge everyone around them to accept the truth and change their lives. This is understandable, because love longs to share its goodness. But it isn't wise. The acceptance of truth involves discarding old standards of belief, and this is a lot to ask of anyone, and can only happen when one is spiritually ready for change. Truth is gladly accepted when one is ready, and if it's presented in an appealing way. No amount of intellectual discussion or argument will ever bring the truth to someone who is not ready for the experience. When most of us realize the concept of truth, we probably picked out several friends we felt would be interested in the same ideas, and then they refused to show any interest at all. On the other hand, those who might not appear to be ready can accept and incorporate truth successfully in their lives. We can never rely on our own judgment to determine who is ready for the truth and who isn't. Rely upon the guidance of the Holy Spirit for inspiration.
If you are praying regularly every day for wisdom, intelligence, and fresh opportunities for service, the right people will be brought to you, or you will be brought to them, and a convenient occasion will be provided for the subject to be introduced. Whenever in doubt whether or not to discuss the subject of truth, pray for guidance and leave the matter to the action of God. Sometimes nothing happens. No convenient opportunity presents itself, and that means the time is not ripe, and no good would have been done by discussing it. Very often, however, an obvious opening does occur in the conversation, or some external incident happens which furnishes an introduction to the subject. Some very surprising and pleasant awakenings happen in this way. Above all, be careful of forcing the subject of truth upon the people closest to you, at work and especially at home. It's easy to cause more harm than good by becoming an irritating nuisance, constantly expounding on an experience that people don't understand and aren't ready to accept. Those close to you are aware of your faults and weaknesses. If you constantly talk spiritual enlightenment, your friends may expect you to represent a greater example of perfection. The most effective and efficient way to spread the word of truth is by living the life yourself. Then people will notice the change in you, and as they see improved health and prosperity in your life and happiness shining in your face, they will want to be around you and share in the joy you have found.
When you desire to introduce the truth to a particular person or group of people, it's best to prepare days or weeks in advance by praying, making a special daily treatment for intelligence, love, and above all, wisdom. Claim that the action of God will allow you to say the right things when the time comes and that the words will be accepted in truth. Don't allow yourself to care in the least what the actual result of the discussion may turn out to be. Voice the truth and leave it. You'll often be amazed at the results you get following a few days of spiritual preparation.
Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh, receiveth. And he that seeketh, findeth. And to him that knocketh, it shall be opened. Or what man is there of you, whom if his son ask bread, will he give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will he give him a serpent? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father which is in heaven give good things to them that ask him?
In this passage, Jesus explains the primary truth of the fatherhood of God, on which the whole structure of true Christian religion is based. As long as mankind believed in many gods, a sound religious experience wasn't possible. For all genuine religious experience is a search for conscious union with the One. Many gods means gods of limitation, and they are always represented by being in conflict with themselves. Therefore, only chaotic thought could result. Even those who believed beyond that idea, to the concept of the One or true God, still thought of him as a tyrant king, owning and governing, almost impossible to please, relentless with anger and indiscriminate with vengeance. Many earnest Orthodox Christians still have the belief that man is denied anything in common with God, that God is a great master with no spiritual communion with his subjects, mankind. Jesus clarifies the real relationship between God and man and replaces the distant, all-powerful ruler with the loving Father of all of us. The teaching of Jesus concerning the fatherhood of God was original and unique. In the Old Testament, God is never addressed as Father. Where references to his fatherhood are made, he is referred to as the Father of the nation and not of the individuals. Jesus made the declaration of the fatherhood of God in the opening clause of what we call the Lord's Prayer. It explains, for instance, the tremendous statement in Genesis that man is the image and likeness of God. The offspring must be of the same nature as the parent, and so if God and man are indeed father and child, then man, notwithstanding all his present limitations, must be essentially divine also, and susceptible of infinite growth and improvement. As man's true nature, his spiritual character unfolds, and as he becomes more and more aware of it, he will expand in spiritual consciousness until he has transcended all bounds of human imagination. It is in reference to this, our glorious destiny, that as Jesus himself says, "I have said ye are gods, and all of you sons of the Most High." He emphasized his point by adding significantly, "and the scripture cannot be broken."
I have said, ye are gods, and all of you sons of the Most High.
So, in this passage, we are set free once and for all from the last link on the last chain that binds us to a limited and degraded destiny. We are the children of God and heirs of our Father's estate. As long as we find ourselves full of limitations and disabilities, lacking in responsibility, experience, and wisdom, then spiritually we are children. But as soon as we come of age spiritually, when we can claim our rights and receive them, when the fullness of time has come, we awaken to the truth and realize that God is in our hearts. Then we know we are the children of a great King, and all that our Father has is ours for the using. Health, supply, opportunity, beauty, joy, or any of the other gifts of God. God has given us a dominion over all things, but we are like frightened children, afraid to assume and accept it. Jesus, who knew the human heart as no other has ever known it before or since, understood our difficulty and our weakness in this respect, and with his unparalleled magic of living words, his power of putting fundamental truth in such a simple, direct, and pointed fashion, so that everyone could understand.
Thank you.
Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh, receiveth. And he that seeketh, findeth. And to him that knocketh, it shall be opened.
There are simply no words in any language which could be more definite. For the most part, Christians quietly ignore these words, discount their meaning until they are left without any meaning at all. Again, we are obliged to believe that either Jesus meant what he said or that he didn't. Therefore, we have no option but to believe these words are true and choose to start living this prosperity consciousness. Jesus gives permission for the personal freedom of every man, woman, and child on earth. Freedom from every kind of bondage, physical, mental, or spiritual. Also freedom from resignation, which has been so often preached as a Christian virtue. Resignation is not a virtue, but an unwholesome mixture of fear and laziness. We shouldn't be resigned to inharmony of any kind, or ill health, poverty, sinfulness, strife, unhappiness, or remorse. We have no right to accept anything less than freedom, harmony, and joy, for these things glorify God and express His holy will, which is our divine right. Our most sacred duty, out of loyalty to God and following the wishes and instructions of Jesus, is to accept nothing less than complete happiness and success. We are to pray and meditate and reorganize our lives in accordance with His teaching, continuously, until our goal is attained. This attainment is our victory over every negative condition. This is not merely possible, but promised to us. Ask, and ye shall receive. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you.
Therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. For this is the law and the prophets.
This is the sublime commandment that we call the Golden Rule. Here Jesus reiterates the great law that follows upon his wonderful statement of the fatherhood of God. The underlying explanation for the existence of the great law is the metaphysical fact that we are all fundamentally one, all parts of the great mind. Therefore, to hurt one another is really to hurt oneself, and to help another is really to help oneself. The fatherhood of God compels us to accept the brotherhood of man, and spiritually, brotherhood is unity. The understanding of this great truth contains all other religious knowledge, and is, in the old phraseology, the law and the prophets.
Enter ye in at the strait gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because strait is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it.
is only one way in which man can attain harmony. That is to say, health, prosperity, peace of mind, salvation, in the true sense of the word. And that is to bring about a radical and permanent change for the better in his own consciousness. This is the one and only way, and there is no other. For countless generations, humanity has been trying in every other conceivable method to bring about the salvation of humanity. Innumerable schemes have been designed to bring about happiness by making changes in people's external conditions, while leaving the quality of their mentality untouched. This is destined to failure, because we are spiritual beings, and only a change in the way we think can bring about change in our lives. This change in consciousness is the straight gate that Jesus speaks of, and says that the number of those who find it is comparatively small. But as we evolve spiritually throughout the ages, the number increases more and more. Changing our consciousness for the straight gate, which leadeth into life, Jesus calls the way of life. He says that all other methods of living have wide gates and broad roads that lead to destruction or disappointment. Then, why are there so few who choose the way of life? The changing of one's consciousness, as we have discovered, is really very hard work, calling for constant vigilance and breaking of mental habits, which is sure to be very difficult for a time. The natural way is to be lazy and always to take the line of least resistance. We don't usually get down to truth principles until we're compelled to do so. The way of life, the straight gate, is, however, worth much more than whatever trouble or effort it may require. On this road, the rewards are not temporary, but permanent. Every mile gained is gained for all eternity. The changing of one's consciousness is, in truth, the most important thing we have to do.
Now, if we make this qualitative change in our consciousness, and that is what happens with prayer or treatment, then not only is the effect of that change felt in every phase and department of our lives, but it is with us through all eternity, and we can never lose it. As soon as we obtain the spiritual consciousness, we find that all things work together for goodness for God. Then we experience perfect health, abundant prosperity, and complete and utter happiness. Our bodies will no longer be a burden to be dragged about, merely living, but with an inexpressible joy. Finances are no longer a consideration, as we will always have all the supply we need to carry out any of our plans. The world will turn out to be full of charming people anxious to help us in any way. People will come into our lives only for good. We will be occupied with the most delightful and interesting activities that will be helpful and useful in the widest sense. All our energies and faculties will find full scope of their expression. In fact, we will develop the completely integrated and fully expressed personality that modern psychology strives for. Those who haven't experienced anything of the Christ message may think that this is a beautiful version of perfection, but certainly too good to be true. However, nothing is too good to be true because the love and the power of God are true. If we believe that perfect harmony is really too good to be true, then our belief will prevent us from ever having it. As mental beings, we make the laws under which we live and have to live under the laws that we make. Nothing is too good to be true.
Nothing is too good to be true.
If we believe that the will of God is not perfect and beautiful, but a dull and restricted life with God as a taskmaster or puritanical parent, then our prayers will reflect our belief. Please, God, give me what I so desperately need, but I don't suppose you will because you won't think it's good for me. Since prayers are answered according to our faith, this prayer couldn't yield much positive results.
The truth is, the will of God for us means greater freedom, greater self-expression, wider and newer and brighter experience, better health, greater prosperity, and a wider opportunity to be of service to others, life more abundant. If you are ill or in poverty or doing work that you dislike, if you are lonely or if you have to be around people who displease you, You can be certain that you are not expressing the will of God. And as long as you aren't expressing His will, it's natural for you to experience inharmony. And it's equally true that when you do express His will, harmony will result.
Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns, or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore by their fruits ye shall know them.
Is there any infallible way in which we can find out the real truth about God and about life and about ourselves? Is there any way in which we can tell for ourselves which is the true religion and which isn't? Which of the churches are genuine and which are false? Which books or teachers teach the truth and which teach in error? How many honest seekers for truth, confused and worried by conflicting theologies and arguing groups, have yearned with their whole hearts for some simple test where the honest seeker could discover for himself what the truth really is. Is there a single sincere Christian who wouldn't eagerly strive to follow the wishes of Jesus Christ if only he could find out what they are? We are told by all sorts of people and by all sorts of churches that they alone represent the true teaching. And yet they disagree among themselves upon vital points, both of theory and practice, and each of them individually is full of inconsistencies. Jesus, the most profound and at the same time the most simple and practical teacher the world has ever known, has provided for this need and has given us an utterly simple and universally applicable test for truth. It's a test that any man or woman anywhere can easily apply for themselves. It is as simple and direct as the acid test for gold. It is a simple question. Does it work?
Does it work?
This is the fundamental test for truth. Does it work? Because truth always works. The truth always heals. A true story always turns out to be consistent, while the most plausible lie will break down somewhere under investigation. Truth heals the body, purifies the soul, reforms the sinner, solves difficulties, and pacifies strife. According to Jesus, truth will automatically prove itself by practical demonstration. They shall cast out devils, speak in new tongues, take up serpents, drink any deadly thing with impunity, and they shall lay hands upon the sick, and they shall recover. False teaching, on the contrary, no matter how attractively it may be presented, no matter what social or academic prestige may be attached to it, will demonstrate the absence of truth. Even though perfectly sincere in their claims and pretense, these false prophets, clad in sheep's clothing, come between the seeker and the saving truth. False teachers, despite their intentions, are spiritual wolves. By their fruits ye shall know them. The only proof of true understanding is in successful demonstrations or results. Therefore, we will know when we leave the path, because our demonstrations will cease. Even though our progress might be slow, as long as positive results from our prayers are demonstrated, then we are still on the path. Some demonstrations come easily, some are more difficult. This lets us know where we need more work, more prayer. If no results in your life are evident, then claim that divine intelligence is inspiring you and that you are an expression of truth. Don't try to deny there is a problem and behave like the Pharisees, indulging in self-righteousness and spiritual pride. When someone's life is in a mess, and they claim that they are spiritually above prayer and its results, and don't care to make their life happy and successful, or that they are rewarded in ways that no one can see, it's not only nonsense, but opposes the will of God.
We don't seek answers to our prayers as an end in themselves, but truth is what we're really after. The law says that acquiring understanding of truth in our lives creates an outward and visible sign of inward and spiritual grace. The outer picture of our lives is a gauge that tells us what's happening on the inside. Therefore, we always know where we are, whether we're on the path or not, because there is no such thing as undemonstrated understanding. So if you want to know where you stand spiritually, look at your environment. Begin with your body and physical health. Everything in the soul is demonstrated in our outer lives. And our external world always corresponds to our inner being. Whether it's the testing of your own soul, or the test of a teacher, or the test of a book, or a church, the test is always simple, direct and infallible. Does it work? What are the fruits? For by their fruits ye shall know them.
Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils? And in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity.
Again, Jesus tells us that only those who change in their consciousness to do the will of God in every department of their lives will enter the kingdom of heaven. Not just when it's convenient or beneficial, but a complete dedication with nothing between us and our primary goal. There is no home for the soul in which there dwells the shadow of an untruth. And the shadows try to creep into our lives in subtle ways, which calls for our unceasing awareness and undaunted courage. The price of liberty for the life of our soul is eternal vigilance. We can't allow any organization, institution, any book, any man, woman, or child to come between us and our path to God. We can only rely on our own understanding of the truth within our hearts.
The truth within our hearts.
It's our duty to get all the help that we can from teachers and books and so forth. But if we use their ideas and their words, we are only crying, Lord, Lord, and he will know us not.
The only way into the kingdom of heaven is by genuine, consistent, hard work on your own consciousness to realize God.
Many people find it hard to free themselves from a religion or church that they have outgrown, afraid to break family tradition. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And the people who do break away often find themselves settling into another organization, where they seem to go to sleep again, under the impression that at last, or once again, as the case may be, they have discovered the truth. Some people develop a personal devotion to their spiritual teacher or leader, or rely on a textbook as their infallible source of wisdom. The only infallible thing known to man is the simple text for truth that Jesus gave us: "By their fruits ye shall know them." You should gladly take advantage of helpful teaching wherever you may get it. Go to churches or meetings that help you. Listen to speakers and read books that inspire you to find yourself. But never surrender to anyone your own spiritual judgment. Thank those who have helped you, and acknowledge those who have helped you, and acknowledge the good received, but always be ready to pass on to the next step. Remember that the truth of being concerns itself with the infinite, the impersonal principle of life, and doesn't lend itself to the exploitation of particular personalities or organizations. You do not owe an atom of loyalty to anyone or anything in the universe except your own indwelling Christ, your own spiritual integrity. If merely enrolling oneself in the membership of some organized body were a guarantee of spiritual understanding, our salvation would be a much simpler matter than it is. Temporary alterations in the conditions of our lives can be achieved by willpower, but the only true and permanent way to change our consciousness and our lives is by the practice of the presence of God. Anything we acquire without the presence of God, be it wealth, power, fame, or relationships, we will lose in time. By denying the truth of being, it denies us and can't help us. Dramatically stated in the Oriental way, this becomes, "I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity." We should always work to supply our needs from the spiritual basis, claiming God as our source and realizing the bounty of God as ours. When we acquire this true prosperity consciousness, then we will never be impoverished.
Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine, and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man, which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And every one that heareth these sayings of mine, and doeth them not, shall be likened unto a foolish man, which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it.
Jesus concludes his sermon with a simple, direct, and graphic parable of the two houses. It warns us against the dangers in knowing the truth, or at least knowing about it, and not honestly trying to put it into practice in our lives. One of the very oldest and most important symbols for the human soul is that of a building, a dwelling house, or a temple. Man the builder is a familiar character, like other examples of mental states. Man the fisherman, man the shepherd, and man the king. Since Jesus himself grew up in a carpenter's home and workshop, this analogy seems even more meaningful.
The first thing the builder of a house needs to do is select a proper foundation. Without it, no matter how skillfully and conscientiously the house is built, it will collapse with the first serious storm that comes along. Jesus says he will liken him unto a wise man, which built his home upon the rock. Rock is one of the Bible terms for the Christ, and the Christ truth is the only foundation on which we can safely build the development of our souls. It's the one thing in existence that is absolutely true, never varying, never shifting, the same yesterday, today, and forever. Resting on this foundation, we will stand secure when the winds and rains and floods of error, of fear, of doubt, and self-reproach beat upon our souls, because we are founded on the rock. As long as we depend on anything less than that rock, upon willpower, material security, even the goodwill of others, or our own personal resources, if we depend on anything but God, in fact, we are building on the sand, and great will be our fall.
When Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes.
In this concluding paragraph, we are told quite simply that the people were astonished at his doctrines because the Jesus Christ message is totally revolutionary. It reverses all the standards and all the methods, not only of the world, but of all conventional or orthodox religion. It turns our gaze from the outside to the inside and from the man and his works to God. For he taught as one having authority and not as the scribes. The greatest glory of the spiritual basis is that you begin to know. When you have obtained the smallest true demonstration by means of scientific prayer, you have experienced something that never leaves you. You have the witness of truth within yourself. You are no longer dependent on the word of anyone else. You know yourself, and this is the only authority worth having. Jesus had this authority, and he proved it by the life he led. In the next chapter of Matthew in the Bible, we learn that immediately after he delivered this Sermon on the Mount, on his way back to town, Jesus instantaneously healed a leper. His life proved that his doctrines were not theory, but a practice of the presence of God. Jesus contacted God directly in his secret place, and therefore when he spoke the word of power.